A lovely Saturday, a bit of a breeze, temps in the 70s around the area, and things are going to mellow out. Should be a good Father's Day, and again on Monday. And then rain in on Tuesday, as you heard a moment ago. And it looks like temps are going to stay on the cool side. I don't see any 80s between now, and we'll creep into the 80s next Saturday. Well, let's go outdoors. Steve Kearney joins us, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. And, Steve, this weather, we go from hot and humid and miserable to the cool side and the stormy side as well.
Good afternoon, Steve. If I sound a little tired, I'm tired from catching fish.
Oh, wow.
It was, what a day. This is the first really nice, beautiful day with no wind and warmth in I don't know how long, but it was a really good morning on the water. I had a group from Moorhead, Minnesota, and we were fishing on a lake, the Cormorant Lake chain up by Detroit Lakes, and they bought a cabin on this lake, and they said, hey, would you come up here and take us out and teach us how to fish our lake? And I said, well, they're going to have some low expectations because I don't know the lake. I don't have any intelligence at all. So I started from scratch, and it was just an awesome day. It was just an act of God. It just doesn't happen like this very often. And we got out on the first spot, and I was just kind of feeling my way around and started catching these huge bluegills, which is a pretty rare fish. You don't see many lakes that have really big bluegills. They're really hard to find. So we're catching these beautiful one-pound bluegills. Boom, boom, boom. Wow. It was just awesome. And I said, you know, it's really important that we don't take a whole lot of fish like this because bluegills are, you know, they're few and far between when they're large. You really don't want to take a lot of the big ones. So we took like 15 for four guys and just kept it at that. And we released everything else. And that was cool. We just didn't want to, you know, decimate the population. So we just took enough for those guys to have dinner. And then we went to the North Shoreline and got on an area, and this is one of the things I do at this time of the year. I look for shorelines that have super fast break lines, which means it's very deep water close to shore. And again, I'm just feeling my way around because I've never been on this lake before. So I get out in about 14 feet, just the same depth that the bluegills are at, and we're into these big crappies. It was just an awesome morning, and it worked out so well. And like I told these guys, this isn't normal fishing. You know, we don't do this all the time. This is a rarity. So we had a tremendous morning, and I think it's got a lot to do with this weather stabilizing. You know, we had a bunch of storms come through yesterday up in the North Country with hail. That all blew through, and today is just the perfect day. So I think they kind of responded to the nice weather.
Yeah, that is great stuff, and a new body of water. Now, Steve, is this going to be on your regular list now? Are you going to hit this lake again at some point?
Well, unfortunately, it's like an hour and 15 minutes far from my house. Yeah. So, you know, I have so many good opportunities up in this Otter Tail area that I may or may not go back, but I'm just so impressed to get on a lake I've never been on and have quality fish like that. Which is, again, big bluegills are very rare, very tough to find, and I'm just really impressed. And it was just, you know, an awesome morning, and these guys haven't fished for like 20 years, so I had to kind of give them a tutorial on what we're doing and get the feel, and they got it after a while. And it's just fun to see, you know, when people finally get it and get the cadence down and start catching fish, and they're so joyful and had so much fun, and they were so grateful. It was just one of those, you know, golden days on the water that you never forget.
Yeah, and it looks like we'll get a couple more good days if people are going to be out and about on Father's Day. It should be another good day on Sunday to be out on the water.
Well, you know, Steve, these water temperatures, like we talked about for a week now, were, you know, 77 about 10 days ago, and then they dropped to 62. And the water temperature today was 64, so it's still on the cool side, which is okay. I don't want it to get, you know, 80. So I think we're in for a stretch this week of really good fishing. I like 70s, and that's going to keep the water temperature in check, still in that middle 60s, maybe upper, which is perfect. So we're kind of getting really good Memorial Weekend fishing a couple of weeks late, basically. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, and it looks like we'll finally jump into the 80s, but no crazy heat as we already moved toward the end of June. It's hard to believe. You know, they say the older you get, the quicker time moves. I can't believe we're already talking about 4th of July weekend.
Well, I think this coolness we have right now with the cool water is going to really give us a good bite into July. Instead of kind of, you know, waning and, not doing as well as you get into July, which can be a tough month, I think this is going to really expand the good fishing for a longer period of time because that water temperature is in check. And that's good. I really don't want to see anything, you know, severe, 85, 90. Just the 70s are perfect. So as long as it stays 70-ish, I think we're fine probably for the next 3 or 4 weeks. It should be great fishing.
Yeah, and what have you seen as far as weed growth? I would assume, considering it's been relatively cool, that it's behind schedule as well.
Steve, it depends on the lake you're on. A couple of the lakes I've been on this week, I've been on 5 lakes this week, and some of the weed growth is just going crazy in some of these lakes. It's just nuts. But the lake I was on today was very clear water, and the weeds were very depressed and down and not, you know, really as high as you would expect them to be. So it's kind of lake to lake. Some are, weeded up, some are not. It's just, again, the weirdness of this spring and early summer, it's just, this weather is just nuts, and it's making everything different than normal. The fish aren't in the normal spots, and, it's just been a tough road here the last month or so.
Steve Kearney joining us, Steve Kearney Outdoors. So what's the plan? Are you going to do anything on Father's Day? I know your kids live out of town, or is it just a phone call tomorrow?
Steve, I'm resting my back from setting the hook, so I'm going to rest tomorrow and watch the U.S. Open, maybe watch the Twins and hang out, and then get back on it Monday.
And then a phone call with the kids, of course.
Oh, yeah. I've already received some beautiful care packages from my
kids.
I can't wait to open them up. So, yep, they're wonderful, wonderful children of mine. They're just incredible, and they always honor me on Father's Day, and I hope most fathers are honored tomorrow. It's a big day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, enjoy your day off, Steve.
Yeah, you too, and I hope your daughter gives you a nice big kiss on Father's Day.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think they're going to buy me an early lunch because I said, if we go somewhere to eat, let's go early so I can catch the leaders teeing off in the U.S. I think I'm going to do the same thing as you. Watch some golf, watch a little baseball, and take it easy.
This U.S. Open is so amazing. The rough is so incredible. The greens are just crazy. I don't know how these guys can get through 18 holes the way they do, because these greens are just insidious.
Yeah, they're gigantic, but like Jonathan and Lo and I were visiting about early, they look huge, but the actual area you can hit is probably about the size of a bedroom, so it's not not easy. It'll be certainly a challenge tomorrow in the final day. I think they'll let things firm up even more. All right, Steve, have a good one. Happy Father's Day. Steve Kearney joining us. And by the way, Father's Day is going to be tough. Jonathan, you're in on Sundays. I don't know what that late start of the ball game, if we're going to be able to get Rob in the Outdoor News. 2:15 first pitch, probably not.
We are working on that. We have the show ready to go in case, but there will be the possibility that it will be preempted or we will possibly miss it. So we'll keep you aware tomorrow as the game goes along, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, typically on Sundays our Outdoors coverage continues between 5 and 6 with Rob from the Outdoor News. Great show, hour long between 5 and 6. But once again, Twins and Diamondbacks don't get started on Sunday until 2:15 our time, so it'll be a challenge to get that one in. It is 4:16 when we come back. Why not? Little hockey in June. We know the Wild have made some gigantic moves over the years in the summertime. Are they going to make a big move to improve the club? The Cup has been awarded to the Carolina Hurricanes. Jez Myers is going to join us here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Lovely Saturday in June. Partly cloudy skies. A bit of a breeze. Temps in the 70s around the area. Should be a great Father's Day. And great again on Monday before we see a rainy Tuesday. We'll have a U.S. Open leaderboard in detail coming up. But Wyndham Clark leads Sam Stevens by 3 on the third day of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills on Long Island. Once again, Wyndham Clark by 3 over Sam Stevens. It has been generally a tough day for scoring on Long Island. So there you go. Jez Myers, during the season, is one of our regulars. And Jez, I just want to thank you again for being willing to join us on Saturday afternoons here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Covers the Wild for the Pioneer Press. Jez, you sent out a tweet today that I agree with 110%. This is a beauty. And I want to read it, if you don't mind. To whom it may concern in my neighborhood, unless a child is trapped under a fallen limb, running a chainsaw before 7 a.m. on a Saturday is likely unnecessary.
Seemed a little premature to me. I'll just say that. Yeah. You know,
7 a.m.?
Nice quiet Saturday morning. You know, you got the windows open. It's nice and cool. Great sleeping night. And lo and behold, and again, if it's an emergency, you know, if it's sitting on your car or you know, if something like that. But this is clearly somebody who woke up, saw that there was a tree limb down and said, well, I'm just going to take that out right now. You know, like 7 a.m. It's like, come on, that's something you can do at about 10, right? Don't you think?
Oh, just yeah. Saying. Yeah. Well, we have strict rules on power equipment at our house. I don't know if the law has been laid down. Generally, it needs to be an emergency for me to run any sort of outdoor power equipment on a Sunday, period.
I grew up going to Lake of the Woods. My family has two cabins side by side on Flag Island, just a beautiful place to spend summers. One was our cabin, one was my grandparents' cabin. My father used to joke that the lawnmower, he needed some kind of timer on it, so my grandfather's lawnmower wouldn't start before 9 a.m., because my grandpa was one of those, you know, up bright and early, get the lawnmower going, you know, on a Saturday while everybody else is sleeping. And yeah, I get it. So anyway.
Yeah, but I that one, you know, the early outdoor power equipment on the weekend. And now, if the limb was blocking the driveway, or as you pointed out, child was trapped, by all means. But beyond that. Keep the chainsaw in the shed, if you will.
I hope they got their work done. I hope everything worked out okay. Just wasn't the alarm clock I was anticipating on a Saturday.
Now, there's one thing I want to start out with, and I'm always thrilled when someone gets an opportunity in this business. I was thrilled for you when you got the opportunity to become the beat writer at the Pioneer Press and cover the Wild full-time. And by the way, you've done a phenomenal job. Congrats to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think the hockey community lost a great friend, Jesse Pierce, and her children in that terrible fire. Just a tremendous loss. And I couldn't think of a better person to step into that void and cover the Wild for NHL.com. In our friend Heather Rule, and congrats to her for getting that gig.
I sent Heather a text the other day. Congratulated her on the gig, and you know, she's the natural person to take over. And she even admitted, kind of bittersweet, because you know, she got the job, but never the way you want to get the job, to lose Jesse, who was such a bright light in all of our lives. The one thing I told her, in knowing the friendship they had, if Jesse could have picked her own successor, it would have been Heather. And so I think that there's maybe some justice there in the world. But yeah, it still seems so unreal to not have Jesse in our lives. And she was just such a smiling face every day when she came to the rink, and such a bright spot. And just you know, there's no end to the tragedy of what happened there. So a loss for all of us, really. But yeah. Congrats to Heather, and Heather will do a great job. I'm looking forward to working alongside her like I did with Jesse all those years.
Yeah, and a regular at the rink, that's for sure. Whether it's the hockey tournaments, you name it, all the way up. She spends a lot of time in the building, knows the game, and good for her. It is quiet at the moment. The Cup's been handed out. I haven't had a chance to visit with you, but what a run by the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, it just unbelievable how dominant they were.
Absolutely. And, you know, Rod Brind'Amour just it does things his way, always has, as a player going all the way back to when he was at Michigan State, you know, as an NHL player, winning a cup with Carolina. Really, he's found a home there. You know, so for him to kind of do things his way, put together the team he put together, you know, they made a good trade where they had Mikko Rantanen for a little while last year and then traded him for a young player in Stankoven. You know, that worked out great. They got good goaltending throughout this series. I got to talk about Brandon Bussey. Here's a guy, I watched him play his last college game. They lost to the Gophers. He was at Western Michigan. They lost to Minnesota in a regional final in 2022. You know, kind of a backup goalie for Carolina. Well, Freddie, you know, Anderson is having some struggles during the Stanley Cup Finals. They bring in Brandon Bussey, who nobody has ever heard of before, and he winds up backstopping them to a Stanley Cup. I mean, what a cool story! And they had their Stanley Cup parade this morning in Raleigh, which, you know, just a kind of a fun hockey market, non-traditional, obviously. You know, you don't think hockey in North Carolina, but this is their second Stanley Cup there, their third trip to the final. They get great fans there. They've got an arena that's surrounded by a gigantic parking lot, so it's tailgating city there. Just a fun place, and good for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, and the old Hartford Whalers for the old-timers made the move down there. Long live the Whale. I'll leave it at that. Jess, another storyline in all of this was the Vegas Golden Knights, kind of surprising, emerge out of the West when everyone thought it would be either the Avalanche, the Stars, or the Wild that would emerge and represent the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Final. Didn't work out that way. Vegas gets there. And then Torts is out anyway.
Yeah. And that's a surprising one. I got to say this. You got to love the fact that Vegas went from being kind of a cool story 9 years ago when they started to now they're almost like the villain. You know, they're the team that nobody wants. Your casual fan is like, yeah, we're sick of Vegas already, you know, and they've kind of embraced that idea almost, you know, like, hey, yeah, let us be the bad guy. We're fine. Their general manager, Kelly McCrimmon, addressed that in their end of the season press conference. He says, yeah, I realize people don't like us. They don't like us because we win, you know, so he's okay with the bad feeling. As long as they're competitive. But you talk about the fact that, you know, Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, you know, kind of the three teams everybody was talking about in the West and the way the playoffs were structured, you know, Minnesota, Dallas in round one, Minnesota, Colorado in round two, you really saw just how much those series took out of the team that eventually emerged from it, which was Colorado. They just had nothing left in the tank by the time they got to the third round, and good for Vegas for pouncing on the opportunity that was given to them and getting to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, and what about the Torts thing? I mean, what do you make of that? Where it's just one of these guys who's bounced around, does a good job, but kind of wears out his welcome.
You know, it's funny. The next narrative along those lines we're going to be talking about now is Mike Babcock. He's supposedly in the running for the job in Edmonton. Sure. You talk about a guy who has, you know, left chaos in his wake everywhere he's gone. You know, they didn't like him when he was with the Red Wings. They didn't like him when he was with Toronto. You know, then, you know, he's out of hockey for a while. He wore out his welcome real quickly in Columbus, didn't even coach a game there, and players kind of rebelled against the way he was running the team in training camp, and now he's maybe going to get another chance. So I've said this before, Tortorella being one of them. You saw Jim Hiller just get hired in Toronto after getting fired in Los Angeles. Nobody recycles like the NHL. You know, that's how you get a job in this league, is to get fired from another job in this league. Tortorella, I think, is going to be one of those guys that's always going to hang around there. And here's what's scary if you're an NHL coach. You know, the Knights were going to make the playoffs. They were doing fine. 8 games left in the regular season, they fire their coach and they bring in Tortorella, and he takes him to the Stanley Cup final. Now, with that precedent set, man, if you have a bad March, even if you're a coach that's headed for the playoffs, are other GMs going to say, you know what, let's make a late change in the season. Let's bring in a guy who's going to crack the whip and, you know, Tortorella style, that he's that disciplinarian, that he's got a certain window of opportunity to get guys playing. Well, you know, I would be afraid if I were an NHL coach that that's going to become more the norm now, these late in the season changes.
Jez Spire is joining us, covers the Wild for the Pioneer Press, and joins on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. All right, on to the Wild. All quiet for now, but we do know this. The Wild put a lot of chips in the middle of the table. They bring in Quinn Hughes, etc. The goal win now for the owner, certainly the general manager, Bill Guerin. I would assume in this offseason they need to continue to be aggressive and add with the idea that, oh, by the way, they're still in a division with the Avalanche and the Stars.
Absolutely. And you look at, like, Utah, you know, maybe emerging now as a team. You look at St. Louis, that's rebuilding their coaching staff. They're a team that doesn't want to be out of the playoffs too long. So the Central Division is not getting any easier. And you saw where the Wild's priorities were. The first signing they made, with all of the pending free agents and all that out there, first thing they did was went and wrapped up Michael McCarron to a long-term deal. You know, they really liked what they saw in him. They got him for a second-round pick right at the deadline. He was a big guy, a tough guy, a guy who wins faceoffs, a guy who's not afraid to drop the gloves. They really liked what they saw, and he clearly could have gotten more money, I think, on the free agent market if he would have let it go to July 1st. But he talked about it after signing with the Wild, that there's a window here right now. This is a team that they think could win a Stanley Cup within the next couple of years. And, you know, he wanted to be a part of that. So that was something to see. Now, with all of that said, with Michael McCarron wrapped up to a long-term deal, that leaves you wondering, what's the priority on Matt Zuccarello, for example? What's the priority on Vladimir Tarasenko? Some of these guys that are potentially heading to free agency on July 1st, and we haven't seen any movement there. And one thing that's been talked about is the fact that there's still a salary cap in place, even though it's going up. And keep in mind, starting July 1st, you're paying Kirill Kaprizov $17 million a year. Oh. So that maybe limits a little bit of what you can do as far as salaries and retaining other guys. So that's why they pay Bill Guerin a lot of money, is to make those decisions and figure out all the math. And he's got a good team behind him to do all that. It will be a very interesting couple weeks here, I think, with the draft and then with free agency approaching.
Yeah, and here's the big one as well, and Quinn Hughes. And ultimately, what they gave up to get Quinn Hughes, we all saw how good he was. If you didn't pay a lot of attention to the Vancouver Canucks, you knew how good he was, but we were able to see how good he was and how impactful he was. That's another huge story as well.
Yep, and he has said, you know, he'd be very interested in signing an extension here. You know, there's all this talk that he's going to want to play with his brother Jack eventually. His Jack, of course, with the New Jersey Devils. His brother Luke is there as well. There's a thought, and this is just a theory. We haven't seen it play out yet, but there's a thought that Quinn Hughes could sign an extension here in Minnesota for 2 or 3 years, let's say. Not a long-term deal. I don't see him signing for 8 years here in Minnesota unless they somehow get Jack over here as well, you know, get the family reunion happening in Minnesota. But Jack Hughes becomes a free agent in 3 years. So the thought among a lot of people is Quinn signs a three-year extension here in Minnesota. He gives it a shot to win a Stanley Cup here. And then potentially he and his brother hit the free agent market at the same time 3 years from now, where they can kind of shop themselves around as a package deal, similar to the Parisian Suter deal that we saw back in 2012, where they both said, hey, we want to go to Minnesota. We want to play there. You know, didn't work out the way fans hoped it would ultimately, but that's an intriguing possibility. So I will look forward to seeing, again, what happens on that front as well with Quinn Hughes. He's got another year left, and the Wild can negotiate exclusively with him for the next year. But that's something where I think Bill Guerin's going to want to get that done before they go into training camp or maybe shortly after the start of training camp, like he did last year with Kaprizov.
All right, final quick one. Dylan Larkin and those rumors at this point, wants out of Detroit, wants a trade. That's kind of been the hot one as of late when it comes to the Wild and potentially Larkin joining the club.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing, too, is, you know, it's not just Minnesota. A lot of folks are interested in Dylan Larkin. And the price tag that people are mentioning for this guy is pretty astronomical. So, you know, I'm of the thought, the way Bill Guerin does business, he makes his best offer right away and says, this is what we can offer you. You know, that's what they did with the Quinn Hughes trade. He made one offer. It was his best offer and said, this is what we got. I'm wondering if that hasn't already happened in the case of Dylan Larkin. I don't know that, but knowing Bill Guerin, knowing that he's out there, he might have said, okay, here's what we can offer you, and Detroit is maybe mulling it over, seeing what they can get elsewhere. But the price tag is pretty high for a player like Dylan Larkin. And, you know, I just don't know if the Wild are willing to go, you know, mortgage too much of the future for one player.
Yeah, and they already gave up a ton of that in the Quinn Hughes deal with the Canucks. Jess, always great. Good to visit with you. Hopefully the fish are biting this summer for you.
Absolutely. I get to go up to my cabin on Father's Day. I'm looking forward to that. So, you know, that's what everybody wants in the summer in Minnesota, right? So a little time by the water somewhere.
Yeah, very nice. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Steve. Always great to talk hockey.
All right, there he is, Jez Myers of the Pioneer Press. Good enough to join us here in the summertime here on News Talk. E3OWCCO weather in a moment. Third round of the U.S. Open underway in the Hamptons, Shinnecock Hills, and Wyndham Clark, your leader at the moment. He's still in his front nine at 6 under par, and I keep wanting to say Cat Stevens is second, but it's actually Sam Stevens at -4. Xander Schauffele all alone at 2 under par in third, and Scottie Scheffler, number one in the world, trying to complete the career grand slam, tied for fourth at 1 under par. So he's one of the few players moving up the leaderboard at the moment. Sunny, breezy. They sent a note to players after round number two saying that the course would firm up. It would be playing more difficult, which I felt was unusual. And Jonathan Lowe is in today. Lindsey Brown has a day off. Typically, Jonathan in on Sundays here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. And Jonathan, the one thing I've noticed about golf, and you and I have watched a lot of golf together on the weekends in studio and talked a lot of golf, is it seems now, especially around the majors, there's almost endless complaining by somebody about the setup. It's too hard, it's too easy, it's too this, it's too that. I just wish at some point everyone would just shut up and play golf. it's crazy how much complaining there is around these majors.
I mean, I will say this, I don't remember hearing this as much 10 years ago, 15 years ago, with setups of courses. But I think Shinnecock, amongst really the major players in the major circuit here in the U.S., that kind of gets the most. I think it's just a special circumstance that one gets the most. The only other one I can really think of that's really come across this kind of scrutiny in the last 15 years or so is Chambers Bay, when they played out there in 2015. I know Aaron Hills got some flack for the rough before the tournament back in 2018, but because of that, they ended up taking down the rough, and then all the rain came and the course was soft and you just had exploding numbers as far as birdies and everything just because
they threw darts in there.
Yeah, Aaron Hills I think is much more of a setup to a Shinnecock, where it's a links style course. It's got a lot of high grass and it doesn't have a lot of trees that block views, obstruct views for the golfers. And so if you have conditions like they had on Thursday where it was a little bit softer, and especially in the afternoon when the wind died down, that was conducive to scoring. And that's how you got the late afternoon wave getting such a getting favorable course conditions. Once the wind comes up at Shinnecock and dries out the course, it's a difficult test. It always has been.
Yeah. And in the history of the U.S. Open there, I know the one year it dried out to the point where, you know, some would say there were holes and there were greens that were just unplayable. You couldn't hit a shot on the green and it would stay on the green, that it would ultimately roll off. And I think they were defending against that. And on Thursday, the story is they were expecting 30-mile-an-hour winds all day. And it is a golf course built very close to the sea on Long Island. And all of the greens and the green complexes are designed where they're just exposed to the wind and can dry out really quickly. But I think we got pretty good theater right now. And once again, world number one, Scottie Scheffler. And I think the storyline, if he can hang in there and keep it close, would be going into Sunday. And he has a chance to complete the career Grand Slam. He's won all the other majors. He's looking to add a U.S. Open to his resume. And, of course, Rory McIlroy completed the career Grand Slam a little over a year ago. So that would be a major story. It hasn't been done very much. But it is interesting about golf, and I think maybe what we've seen is when LIV came on board and a number of players signed, went to LIV, and there was a lot of hand-wringing, it seems to me there's been more negativity around golf, because it was just the PGA Tour and the majors and the European Tour. And then LIV came into the mix, and there was so much more talk about money and these elevated events and no-cut events and prize money, etc. And I just wish they would get back to the golf. And the tournament is what it is. For the guys who made the cut, no matter how it's set up, they're all playing the same course. They're all dealing with the same conditions. Even if it is extremely difficult, they're all in the same boat, so to speak. They have to go out and try and post a score and win a major on a very difficult golf course. And I would assume they'll continue to let it firm up. And Sunday is really going to be a test for whoever's going to win this major.
Yeah, as long as you don't have the ball that is moving when the wind is, you know, it's moving on its own. It's not being hit by the players, and the wind isn't a story that way. Yeah. I think they'll continue to just let it be as it is. But if it does get up to, you know, peak British Open conditions, as I'd like to say, then they'll probably try to water down, slow it down so that it's not as effective on a fast green, on a fast pitch, than it would be on a wow. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Scheffler just hit an approach on 16 on a 601-yard par 5, has a really good look at eagle.
And he got lucky to get there, because that looked like it was headed into the bunker. He just barely missed getting into the bunker on the front side.
Yeah. And on Long Island, it doesn't look particularly windy tomorrow, but I still think it'll be firm. And really great sports theater. And I think this is a tournament, the Masters really being the other, that will draw in the casual sports fan, because, number one, it is a major. Number one, it is the U.S. Open. There is just so much incredible drama, typically, in the final rounds of these events, and Shinnecock certainly manufactured. Yep. I don't even know what I would shoot out here.
Oh, Lord.
We had a conversation earlier in the week, some of the other folks that play golf, and I think I'd feel really good, even from the members' tees, like 120.
Yeah.
You know, if I could go 60-60, I'd feel pretty good about it.
I'd probably have to shoot for like 130-ish, but 120 would be good. I think 120 would probably be right around where I'd hit it around at. But you just got to remember, going into this week, this edition of the Open there, there had been, I believe the number was 665 players, over 650 players had played there, 650 rounds of golf there. And at the end of four rounds, three players were under par. At the end of three at the end of these tournaments, this is the sixth time this has been there. At the end of five tournaments, three players total finished under par.
Yeah, and right now, Clark leading Stevens by two. Shoffley and Kim tied for third. Four back, world number one Scotty Scheffler in a group at five off the lead. And as we work our way through the day, we'll continue to keep you up to date on the U.S. Open. We got a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little NBA. Once again, every team other than the Knicks looking at what they need to do in the offseason. I'm sure the Knicks are already considering what they need to do to defend their NBA title. And then Bobby Nightingale is going to join us from the Valley of the Sun. He's covering the Twins and the Diamondbacks, game two of the three-game series tonight. We'll get an update on the home nine with Bobby following the news and weather at 5 here on a Saturday at News Talk, 830-WCCO. Steve Thompson, Jonathan Lindsey Brown has a day off today. We'll still do Read and React at 5:35 today. Bobby Nightingale from Arizona is covering the Twins. The Knicks are the champs. I did not have that on my bingo card. I don't know how many did, but the Knicks went on a tear, and they win it all. I think everybody thought there was a great chance for OKC to go back-to-back. They didn't. The Spurs and Wemby get to the finals, and the Knicks take them down. Knicks winning a title, New York, I think it's good for the NBA. I think this is what the NBA needed.
I think I tend to agree with that. I mean, the Knicks fan base, sometimes you're just like, okay, enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is fine. But the franchise itself, the fact that they broke the longest drought in the history of the NBA between titles, that's a big thing. That's
73.
Yeah, 52 years, the longest drought between championships. That's huge.
It is, and I think for a league where it was like Oklahoma City was poised for this long era of dominance. And I'm not saying that they're not going to be, you know, deep playoff runs and winning more NBA titles. I'm not saying that at all. Yeah, Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs are poised. I think Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves would like to have something to say about it. I think there are some clubs in the East. But really, for the Knicks and Jalen Brunson, and then our old friend Karl Anthony Towns, even though he didn't have a great Game 7 to win a title, it's something I feel good. I'm happy for Cat, no doubt. All right, we got to run. We got all the news, all the weather at 5. We'll get an update on the Twins. They play later tonight in Arizona, Twins and Diamondbacks. We have the news in a moment.